This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us today for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge and outside the area, 877-217-5757. You can email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with the Secretary of State for the great state of Louisiana, John Thomas Shedler. He's been on the job as the state's chief elections officer for 7 years, and tomorrow is election day statewide, and yet the turnout, unfortunately, is not expected to be robust. Good morning, Tom Shedler.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be with you again.
It's always good to talk with you. What about turnout? What are we looking at based on your forecast?
Jim, we are predicting something in the range of 15%, and that is down from earlier estimate prior to early voting of some 20%. The numbers just didn't pan out on early voting. Some 91,000-plus took advantage of that convenient vote, and when we look at historical data, it doesn't bode well. When you look at it roughly, it represents about 20 to 23% on any given election. So when you factor that out, we're looking at about a 380, maybe 400,000 total vote, with about 90,000 predicted to come out of the city of New Orleans because of that mayoral election and city council races. So not a very pretty picture, but nonetheless, we still have time to rectify that tomorrow. I know the campaigns both in New Orleans for a mayoral election have heated up, and certainly the treasurer's race in the last few days has started to stir up. Jefferson Parish has got a very hotly contested council race out there with Senator Martini and an individual on the county council. So it's starting to get a little interesting. But nonetheless, if we look at historic numbers and the numbers in front of us, it certainly doesn't bode for a huge turnout.
But here we are electing one of the seven statewide officers, the treasurer, and maybe fewer than 400,000 people will show up. And we do have right at 3 million registered voters, don't we?
Yes, we do. And we fluctuate, you know, a little above that line and a little below it on any given day, but because it's a moving target, but for argument's sake, 3 million voters, which was historic. I remember you and I speaking of that in our earlier show about that historic moment when we reached that.
Well, you have made an effort and a good one to get people to register to vote, and it's reaped dividends with our state having one of the highest percentages of registered voters, but it's the old, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. For whatever reason, we're not voting the way we should.
That is correct. And unfortunately, it's a nationwide problem, Jim, but it's certainly my interest is in Louisiana, and we've got to find a way. I tell you, we've done a little bit of everything with the Honor Vets program, the Blue Dog stickers. And I even, as of lately, I don't know if you've seen, I had made a tongue-in-cheek comment to Channel 9 in an interview where I said, I hope I have to eat crow next week in front of this camera if we can exceed 15%. And that's somewhat taken legs, and I've now been challenged if, in fact, if we get above 15, will I eat a crow? And I said I will. I'll have to see if John Foltz can make one tasty enough for me to put down. But if that's what it takes, I'll eat the crow. Because there was nothing would make me more happier than for us to exceed that and make the prediction mute.
877-217-5757 for Tom Shedler, Secretary of State. He represented the people in St. Tammany Parish in the Louisiana Senate for many years, a graduate of the University of Louisiana Lafayette, and also a graduate of De La Salle High School in New Orleans. So he knows the state well, particularly South Louisiana, where most of the people are. And Tom Shedler, speaking of that, we've got a race for treasurer and three Republicans in the race who are from different parts of the state and a Democrat who's from the greater New Orleans area. It would seem that based on the fact that at least three of the four of them have run serious campaigns, that would spur turnout, but it really hasn't generated a lot of interest.
Not at all, Jim, and you're absolutely right. Mr. Edwards, the lone Democrat, is at least by polling, would in the demographic side, especially with the tilt of New Orleans with that 90,000 voters out of maybe 400, You've got to believe that Mr. Edwards has a secure spot or should have a secure spot in that runoff. So it's a matter of which Republican out of the three majors get into that. And you're right. There has been no clear indicator of which one breaks out the pack. It's a fairly even heat, and even on the eve of election, still a sizable undecided vote. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch tomorrow night. We also have that Public Service Commission race, three constitutional amendments on the ballot, and several other things. Mm-hmm. I know there's a state rep race over in St. Tammany to be dealt with, and some judgeships. So it's a little bit of everything across the state. We have 12 parishes, however, that only have the treasurer and the constitutional amendments. So in those particular parishes, and that's what drives that number down from a potential maybe 25, could hit 30, but I think that's a stretch in New Orleans only. But that will lift that statewide number up to 15%. We'll have some parishes, sadly, to probably be single digits with voter turnout.
Yeah, that's not good. But last year, we actually exceeded the nation as far as the percentage of people who voted in the presidential election, didn't we?
Well, we did not lead the nation, but we
exceeded it.
Yes, sir. We exceeded the average, correct. I'm sorry. And that has been fairly tradition of us here in Louisiana. You know, presidential elections bring out, that's the best turnout. You know, you and I have spoken, the record setter here was the Edwin Edwards David Duke gubernatorial election at some 72%, 73, if I don't remember the exact number, but you know, with the last three presidential elections, we were just shy of 70%, 69%, and that is usually the benchmark, and we're fairly consistent with that if you look historically. Where the downfall has come has been on statewide elections, even gubernatorial elections or elections of which I run also. We've seen it used to be 50. We've last time we fell to like a 42-43%. So even that has seen its difficulties, but certainly when you get to special elections like this or local elections, those types of things, 20-25% in or lower is not something we're not used to, and that's a sad commentary to admit.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Tom Shedler. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mr. Shedler.
Morning, Dan.
Is it somewhat indicative of the shallowness of red state Louisiana's voters that more people will be watching LSU football, even when the team isn't that good, than bothering to go vote?
Well, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I personally think that the drawdown starts nationally. I think people are, I think I give you a multitude of reasons why voter turnout is where it is, but I think you almost have to start with people's frustration at the national level. You can look at the like-dislike of Congress, and then it filters on down from there. I mean, I've always touted, too, Louisiana has way too many elections, although we have made tremendous headway with that over the last 7 or 8 years. But nonetheless, I mean, it's just my vote doesn't count. I don't care. I don't like any of the candidates. But it has always amazed me that a country that freest country in the world that has all the benefits we have, and I realize it's a work in progress and still being built. But let's face it, I'll take this as the alternative over many other places, but yet we find it difficult to get people to either not attend a football game or go hunting or whatever it may be. And the sad thing is that today, unlike not too long ago, you know, you've got a week of early voting, you got no excuse absentee voting, and you have the longest election day, tied with New York State, I believe, is the only one left at the 7 to 8 p.m., and yet we have a diminishing voter participation. Now, I will say this, and this is not a hit on this because I certainly understand why it was done. But if the one thing that we have to factor in, it's not an apple for apple when you look historically, and we factor this in when we take estimates. You know, with the motor voter law from the National Voting Rights Act, we've increased tremendously the registrants. As Jim indicated at the onset of the show, it's some 86% of eligibles, and that's good, and that's something you want to do. But by doing that, you get a lot of folks that have either been pressured or embarrassed or whatever it may be. Okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and register, but no one's ever voting. It drives that percentage down. So your chronic super voter in Louisiana still sits at about 20-25% of the electorate.
All right.
And that's what's indicative when you get some of these turnouts.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with Secretary of State Tom Shedler. Your number is 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. Back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you're in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Our guest for a little while longer is Tom Shedler. We'll visit with former LSU star Ramsey Dardar, who has quite a story to tell. He's coming next. 877-217-5757. Now, a listener asks about early voting, Tom Shedler. Were there any parishes that had higher percentages than others?
Well, as you would probably suspect, Orleans Parish, East Baton Rouge Parish, and St. Tammany Parish were the three highest participants. But you can, you know, when you looked at the Baton Rouge area, of course, you add in that Public Service Commission race. You got the State Treasurer's race. So that fueled that. In Orleans, of course, you got the mayoral election and some city council races and judgeships that assisted. And then in St. Tammany Parish, you had two judgeships and also a House of Representatives race on the western side. So those three led the pack, so to speak, but it wasn't anything to write home to anybody about.
Well, obviously, the last time we talked to you, we were discussing this voter fraud commission the president has installed. How is that effort going?
Well, it's somewhat in a stalemate, to be honest with you. You know, we had, as you remember, given them the website for our what we call our commercial list and indicated how they could get that for payment. We refused to give them anything on what we call the confidential side. But as of today, we monitor that. They have never, ever requested it. So it's somewhat, they had a meeting, I think, last week, but I think it was non-eventful. So the status of that is somewhat up in the air.
Well, it's something I know that you take pride in. You certainly are confident that the Louisiana's voting is one that is has integrity. But the president, of course, has said that he thinks that several million people voted illegally in the last election.
Right.
Do you share his concern?
Well, let me just say this. I think that is there issues of potential voter fraud across the country in certain pockets? Yes, I do, but I don't think to the magnitude of which he has described. You know, if you remember the conversation we had, that the issue where I guess I do agree with him is that there is probably a huge disparity in the voter registration list, where a lot of individuals that should have been removed for various reasons, whether it be by death, felon convictions, or moving from one state to another, probably exist. But that does not mean those people are voting, per se. There have been a few issues that have come forth regarding undocumented individuals that have voted in a couple of states. But again, Jim, it's not to the numbers that have been alluded to by that commission and our president.
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Tom Shedler, the Secretary of State. The last 7 years, almost 3 million registered voters in Louisiana out of a population of about 4.6, 4.7 million people. So that puts us, what, in the top five nationally as far as percentage of citizens who are registered?
Yes, sir. We've been as high as third and fourth or fifth at any given time. Again, a moving target, but we've been very consistent with that and, you know, feel proud of what we've done there. But I just wish that we could be equally as proud of getting that 85, 86% to get out and exercise their right. And we certainly, we have time yet to do it. Like I've told folks, I mean, look, we love having a festival or people over and get together. I mean, you have somebody over to watch that ball game tomorrow. In view of Dan's comment, I mean, don't go to the game, watch it on TV, but invite people over and tell them to go vote. They've got to come in with an I voted sticker before they come to you get a hamburger or a hot dog.
Well, we used to say that we love politics as much as we love football, and sometimes we do, but sometimes in these other elections, other things take precedent.
That's right. Well, you know, I'll tell you, the state that votes first in presidential campaigns, New Hampshire, Bill Gardner, the Secretary of State, my counterpart, it tells me that, you know, that's a big thing up there. I mean, people bring food to people's houses. They vote in garages and homes. And, you know, there's something to be said for that. It's a community event where people get together, and it's almost like a festival. So, I don't know, maybe that's something we can look at. We can try to encourage people to have a big party on election day and watch the results and everybody bring food and make sure everybody goes to vote and comes in with that blue dog sticker.
Charlotte in New Iberia. Charlotte, you're on the air with Tom Shedler.
Good morning to you, Jim, and good morning to Mr. Shedler. I'd like to ask, when was the law enacted that felons cannot vote? And the reason I ask is, as a child growing up, a person hears that we send people to prison to pay for their crime, and then they are returned to society. Why aren't they given their rights that they were born with? Why don't we restore all their rights?
Well, we do in Louisiana, not while they're in prison or serving any, halfway house, but once they have completed their sentence, they can vote. There is in the packet when they're released is a voter registration document. And in Louisiana, you can get your voting rights reinstated once you've completed that. So there are some states that do not allow that. There are some states that actually even let you vote from prison. But we're kind of in the middle of the pack with that system that you have to complete your sentence completely, and then you can re-register.
When I mentioned that 4.6 million figure for citizens in our state, we're talking about children who are being eligible to vote. We're also talking about prisoners and the infirm. So you've got just about everybody registered to vote who can, it would seem.
That's correct. And Jim, you know, those numbers are really, don't hold me to the temps of a point here, but African-American women eligible are registered at a clip of about 97%. Along with white female, give or take a couple of tenths of a point. White male is right at 83%, I believe, at this time, and African-American gentlemen are right at 78%. So when you blend all that together, that's what gives you that 85-86% of the eligibles.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest, as we would probably all suspect, of registered voters is that age group of 18 to 26, 28 years old, who is not registered, or if they are registered, does not participate. That's one that we are constantly trying to improve on. But, you know, it's like anything else, that they've got their mind somewhere else, when it's in college or wherever it may be. We're also, with the new voting system, looking at the ability to possibly be able to vote anywhere in the state. If you know, when you go early vote, you go to just either your register voter or maybe a register voter in two satellite sites, and they place you into your precinct by that card. It's almost like that room key
right.
at a hotel.
Huh.
Well, think about the concept of being able to vote. If, like someone like myself, to go up to the state archives just 600 feet out of my office door, be able to get a card and put me into my precinct in St. Tammany without having to go to St. Tammany to early vote or get a mail ballot. So that would be indicative of college students on campuses and the like, that they're in the same boat that I'm in. I've got to get a paper ballot or go home for early voting. So We're hoping to be able to institute that over the next year or two.
And lastly, in any given election, it's almost a given that women will vote at about 55% in Louisiana. They have a significant advantage over men as far as actual votes.
That is correct. The highest registrant group, but you are correct, the highest participatory group of that. And, you know, I've always told individuals who have never run for office before, make sure you secure the dominant side of the women's vote, because that's the key.
Well, Tom Shedler, it is always good to talk with you. Hopefully you'll have to eat crow.
I hope so, too, Jim. We'll invite you over. Okay. I'll let you have a bite.
There you go. If John Foles is the chef, I'll be there. Appreciate it. And we're going to be joined in short order by James Ramsey Dardar, former LSU football great. He spent 19 and a half years behind bars. We'll talk with him about his remarkable story after the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Ramsey Dardar is with us. Many remember him 35 years ago as the anchor of an LSU defense that shut down Florida, Florida State, and Alabama, the only Tiger team to beat those three powers in the same season. And they went to the Orange Bowl. Ramsey was drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, played in the NFL, but had a drug issue, and as a result, his career was cut short, and ultimately he landed in jail. In the last 19 and a half years, he's been incarcerated. He's fresh out of prison, and it has, what, been about a month now?
It's been about a month.
About a month.
September the 1st.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm getting to see a lot of my old friends, some of my coaches, guys I hadn't seen since I left LSU. And matter of fact, we had an invitation by Coach O to come watch practice and speak to some of the guys, some of the younger players, and even had a few recruits we got to meet and spoke to them, and it was a nice affair.
You actually were a teammate very briefly with Coach O.
Yes, I was. Coach O and I came in the same class, 1979. And he was there for a year. And
well,
not really though.
He didn't.
He didn't play while he was there. But he transferred and got a chance to play at Northwestern,
right,
with his old high school teammate Bobby Hebert.
There you go. 877-217-5757 for the pride of Cecilia High School and LSU. Ramsey Dardar, who dominated Dave Remington, who was the best offensive lineman in the country in 1982. They went toe-to-toe in the Orange Bowl, and Ramsey got the better of it, but Nebraska won the game 21-20. Memorable season, and since then you've had a lot of issues in your life. Have you kicked the drug problem for good?
Oh, the drug problem is gone, man. The night I got arrested, I said a prayer in the backseat of the officer, and I asked God to just guide me and to help me. I knew I was going to do some time, so I was put in a lot of peculiar positions, being sent to Angola, where everybody at Angola who had numbers was going to satellite camps, and I was wondering why I was being sent to Angola, being that I had numbers and not life. They was trying to get all lifers at Angola. But it worked out. I was tested. You know, everybody know there's drugs in prison, just like there's drugs on the street. And just like they come in this country, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you can't stop it. You know, I was tested. I was, when I first went to Angola, I was at what they call Camp J. Is known as one of the most notorious section of any prison in America. And I was tested. There was drugs. There was a lot of violence. You know what I'm saying? But God protected me, and I made the right decisions. I didn't use any drugs. for 19 and a half years, I haven't touched anything. I've seen a lot of it. And like I said, I was tested, but I was determined not to, because I wanted to still have a life, man. You know, even 19 years of my life was taken, which, you know, I can't blame nobody. I'm the one who made the decision to use drugs. But I don't think I was ever a bad person. I just think I made some bad decisions, and it cost me.
When you were in prison, did some of these guys want to take you on?
Well, not necessary. I think being the guy that I was, being that I had a name, you know, being a football player, I think it helped me out a lot, because a lot of guys, instead of talking, you know, smack or whatever to me, a lot of them wanted to know what it was like being a football player, being a professional, you know, being a LSU player. So a lot of that made it a little bit easier for me. Nobody really took me on, because I wasn't that type of person. I didn't affiliate with guys who was not about doing what was right and was not looking forward to, you know, reuniting with their family. So I had a different goal. I wanted to get back out of prison and be with my family, which I'm back with my wife, and I'm enjoying my children. I've just not gotten settled yet, but it's coming around.
You're still a big, powerful man, and I would imagine that also would negate a lot of people in prison from wanting to take you on. Were you able to work out behind bars?
I worked out and played a little sports, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I focus a lot more on trying to get myself right for society, joining clubs, and just trying to be the best person I could be while under a stressful, real bad, position.
Did you ever think you would get out?
Oh, I knew I was going to get out. But almost two decades is a long time in prison, man.
Yeah, and
it's a long time in prison.
First time you arrived on campus, for example, it looks a lot different than it did 20
yes.
years ago, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, indeed. Louisiana, period. I mean, everywhere you go, it's different. You know, I mean, matter of fact, I make a little joke out of it. Me and my wife was driving from Baton Rouge, and we was about to go visit some of my kinfolks in Breaux Bridge. And the first time we drove by my house and couldn't even recognize the
really
where I lived at. Yeah, it was strange.
Wow.
And then the biggest problem I have right now is a computer thing.
Yeah, do you have a smartphone yet?
Man, no, I don't. No, I don't, but I've been using my wife's, and I'm trying to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new computer world, even the gas pump.
Yeah,
I mean, my wife laughs at me, but, hey, that's all new to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you have to have a computer class, take a computer class, keep up with all the new stuff they have.
When you're in prison, and by the way, you were transferred from Angola.
Yes, I was.
You spent the last several years.
I spent about 16 years at Elaine Hunt's Correctional Center.
Right. They didn't give you any kind of indoctrination on what you would expect outside the prison?
Well, that's a such thing as they call it pre-release. Everybody has to take it. It tells you about... it tells you a lot about how to manage your money, how to try to gain employment, different things. You know what I'm saying? But it's like somebody that's telling you about prison who never been to prison. It's not like somebody who's been to prison that can really tell you about prison. So I'm gonna just say. It's different in a way that you could read it on paper and they could talk to you about it, but until you experience it, it's totally different than what you learn before you leave.
What was the worst part about it?
About?
Being in prison.
Well, the worst part about it was being away from my family, being away from my wife and my kids and my relatives and people that you love dearly dying on you, and you really can't grieve by yourself. It's mm-hmm. hard to grieve for some, you know. It's hard to grieve when you don't really have anybody, any family members to grieve with you.
Well, while you were in prison, your first coach, Charlie McClendon, died.
Yes, that's true.
And Jerry Stovall's still alive and well, but he's 76 years old now.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you talked with him?
Well, I haven't spoken to him, but we stayed in touch with each other while I was locked up.
Did he ever come to see you?
I'm gonna hook up with him.
Did he come to see you?
Oh, yeah. He's been there a few times.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people who would have abandoned you.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But yeah. Jerry Stovall, your coach, came to see.
Yes, he did. A few times.
What did
matter of fact, he's come up there and did some motivational speaking. He came to a Toastmasters event on my behalf, and he was there for me. Yeah.
What did he tell you?
Well, you know, what can he tell me? All he could tell me is, hey, man.
Hang in there.
My biggest supporter, though, I have to say, my biggest supporter while at LSU was you. I mean, you would think, okay, you play football, you have. I had quite a few supporters from LSU.
What's your biggest one?
My biggest supporter was Coach Dale Brown. That guy has been there for me like a father, for real.
I think it was his speaking on your behalf that got you out of jail.
Exactly. So, man, I tell you, he's been there for me in every way, you know, even for my family, for my children, you know, my son when he was younger, when I first... Coach Brown set him up to meet meet Shaquille O'Neal, have pizza with Shaquille O'Neal, and Shaq was real generous and supply him with some pictures so he can give some of his friends at school. And so I could just say, you know, I owe Coach Brown. I mean, any success I do have in the future,
you owe Coach Brown.
Yes, I do.
All right. We're going to spend some more time with Ramsey Dardar after this brief pause on WRKF. This is Jim Eagster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we're spending the rest of the hour with Ramsey Dardar, former LSU football great, who was the anchor of the 82 defense, which was one of the greatest in LSU history. He played in the National Football League for the St. Louis Cardinals, but then a drug addiction caused him to lose his career and basically lose his life. He has been behind bars for 19 and a half years, was released on the 1st of September, and he is with us talking about his story. And yesterday he was on the field, the practice field at LSU, and addressed many of the players who are currently on the team. 877-217-5757 for Ramsey Dardar. Now, when you got out of school, you drafted by the Cardinals, but there was another league then, the United States Football League. And if memory serves, a fellow named Donald John Trump tried to sign you. You met Don Trump, didn't you?
Yes, I did. He drafted me in the second round. The first round pick was Herschel Walker.
This was with the New Jersey Generals.
That's when they bucked the league and allow underclassmen to get drafted. Whereas the NFL,
Trump wrote the art of the deal. He couldn't get you to sign Ramsey. I'm sure he offered you a pretty good deal.
Well, he did. I got to be honest with you. He offered me a real good deal. He brought me to New Jersey. Our playing field was going to be shared with the New York Giants and the Jets because they played. USFL was going to play in the summertime. They did play in the summertime, My wife at that time, she was hard pressed to sign this for me to sign this contract because it would offer me
how much?
It would offer me twice the amount of money that I could have signed with the NFL. But the reason I didn't do it is because
what was the signing bonus that he was offering?
He's offering me $1 million.
$1 million.
$1 million signing bonus and $1 million.
Donald Trump.
And $1 million to play, you know, $1 million contract. And the biggest reason I didn't do it is because my high school coaches, who was very good, Coach John DeVilliers, Coach Pee Wee Guidry,
They advised you to go to the NFL?
They advised me. They wanted to, well, since I was the first one from my high school to really get a major scholarship to LSU and then to get drafted to the NFL, that meant something to everybody. So
you turned down $1 million from Donald Trump to go to the New Jersey Generals, where Herschel Walker, he got him a year early out of the University of Georgia.
That's right.
You could have been on a team that also included Doug Flutie.
Doug Flutie, Trump the following
was,
year.
Yeah, he was about 36 years old at that time.
He's a young guy.
But even then, he was a flamboyant
fellow. Very flamboyant. I tell you that. He was very flamboyant, a jokester.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah.
In what way?
Well, he'd tell a lot of jokes. You know what I'm saying? Just
not locker room talk.
Locker room talk.
You're
funny
kidding.
Guy. You know what I'm saying? He really wanted me to sign, and like I said, the only reason I didn't do it is because I think Coach Stovall had a lot to do with me getting drafted to
St. Louis.
To St. Louis because they was really on me. You know, he played there for about 10 years.
He did 9, yeah.
Yeah, and so and like I said, a lot of my people back home, they wanted to see me go to the NFL. Because that was the league at that time, and it still is. So,
well, but you could have been one of the greats of the game. 6'3", at that time, you were 265, 270, and that was a big man in the NFL, defensive tackle.
Time.
And you have less body fat than a lot of players who are currently playing, by the way.
Right,
these guys are enormous.
Right.
But you were a ferocious defender. And that certainly was in evidence the day you were arrested. We've told the story before, but you took out a police dog.
Yes, I did. Yeah, yes, I did. I tried to tell him, hey, man, I give up. You know what I'm saying? I know, but, you know.
They sent a dog after you?
Yes, they did.
What happened?
I guess they figured I was a big guy, so I guess they figured, well, let the dog go first. I just look at it and I laugh at it, man, because I was out of my mind at that time.
I don't know many men who could defeat a police dog in hand-to-hand combat.
Well, I did it.
I know you did.
Yeah, I put him to sleep. I didn't kill him, but I put him to sleep. I wouldn't dare kill an animal or anybody, but I put him to sleep. But,
I can, and this was under a house, too.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I can only imagine those officers. They send the dog, a trained killer, after Ramsey Dardar, and there's all kinds of commotion going on under the house, and Ramsey comes out and the dog doesn't.
You're right about that.
That is quite a man. Now, your beautiful wife, Lorraine, is with us. She has joined us, and she has stayed with you through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Lorraine, why didn't you throw in the towel?
I don't know.
Speak up.
Shut up. Ramsey, I don't know. He's, like I said, the person I met at LSU and what he became when he was on drugs, that's what I wanted back was the Ramsey I had met. And when he was in prison, he was. And when you say the words, for better or worse, okay, I was doing the worst because my mom was old school, okay? So.
All right. A listener asked Ramsey, did you ever take steroids?
No, never.
Never?
Never. I don't even know what they look like, to be honest with you.
Well, you did some weight training.
I did a lot of weight training. I was a hard worker. I remember at times the legendary Pete Jenkins.
Who's still there.
Who's still there, who I was with yesterday, and we had a wonderful time. And I watched him coach them guys yesterday, man, and it brought back so much memories. It felt like I could have went out there and give him a snap or two, you know.
I bet you were ready to go.
Yes, sir. But I was such a hard worker, man. I was raised on a farm, and my daddy was he was a workaholic, mm-hmm. and he expected his kids to follow his footsteps.
His sister said that Ramsey lifted horses.
Oh yeah,
and trunks for his weight. Okay,
I used horses.
Okay. Oh yeah, I'd pick up the front legs. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So. Okay. Okay. Well, you're still a force to be reckoned with, and you've got some years left. Just turned 58. So what's in store for you from here on?
Well, first of all, I'm dealing with a lot of things concerning the NFL, with the concussion deal. I'm pursuing employment. But I don't know. I mean, nobody may not hire me because I'm dealing with a lot of health issues. I'm just trying to live a normal life, man. You know what I'm saying? I lost a lot of my life with my wife and my children and my family members. And right now, I'm not trying to be who I'm not. I'm just trying to live, man, and be happy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And pursuing, right. You know, whatever it takes for me to be able to support my wife and help my grandchildren and my children. That's all I'm concerned about, man.
Do you think playing athletics was a plus or a minus as far as what happened?
Playing athletics was a plus all the way, man. I wouldn't change nothing besides me getting hooked up on drugs. Other than that, man, I had my best 4 years of my life was at LSU, to mm-hmm. be honest with you.
I can see you're about to cry right now, and Pete Jenkins, your former coach who's still at LSU, he cried the first time he saw you.
Oh, yeah. Pete cried. Coach O cried. Coach Sam Nader, who's been there for a long time, who's always been good to me, he cried. Everybody cried that was in the room. Lyman White, the guy, one of my good friends, who's real well known in the Baton Rouge area, he was there. He cried. Everybody cried.
You're not
because
going...
They know it was genuine, man. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I had a love for Coach Jenkins, and he had a love for me, and I think the love that he showed me as a coach. I think it made me want to be a better player and want to be a better person. I just made some mistakes.
You're not going back, are you?
Oh, no, indeed. No, indeed. I'll never touch a drug again in my life. Never. Never again. I learned my lesson. It took that much time for my life, but I learned a lesson.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ramsey.
Thank you very
best
much.
Best of luck to you, and hopefully we'll
and go
we'll
Tigers.
Talk again.
Yeah, beat Auburn.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back Monday, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.